Suzanne very much, and I appreciate Transformation promoting me to be here today because this is my passion, stress. Now, when I say that I like stress, I've been around stress for almost 35, 40 years in practice. Well, my practice of medicine actually is 50 years as of this year. I've been practicing medicine.
Wow.
So that was been a long time, and I'm not going to give it up yet. I'm 82. I plan on practicing until about 92. Why? Because I practice what I preach. And so I'm going to give you a fairly good outline of how we can, first of all, basically look at the causes of stress, would be the first lecture. Then the diagnosis of stress, which is the HRV. I'm going to go over the saliva testing, the blood testing. And then I'm going to go over the treatment of stress. Then I also want to talk about something that has to do with my own health that I think that would be very important to prevent because of the problem that we're seeing today that has to do with diabetes. But we'll go over that last this afternoon. But the thing about it is we have now six clinics that I'm about the medical director of all six of them, thank God, because I don't go to Colorado or to College Station all the time. I do go to Round Rock, Lakeway, and I also go to San Antonio. But stress has become a very important part of the whole concept of treating disease. And this is really important because we look at the fact that there are so many people. Is this not working?
Turn it off and then turn it on. Sometimes we have to reset.
Turn it off.
Or
what up?
Your little
handful.
Listen.
I found
it.
Right there?
Oh, okay. Here,
check the menu.
Sorry, I'm not getting that one.
Okay, that should be. Okay. There we go. So we're going to look at the fact, what do all these people have in common? For God's sakes, you would probably guess very quickly, they most likely all have in common what we call stress. But I'm going to show you some causes of stress that you have probably not even aware of today. Because they always think about stress being, you know, something to do with, oh, someone's dying, someone's sick, and so forth. But we're going to go into a whole lot of other causes that are bringing up cortisol. Now, what we see here in the definition of stress is thought to be a state of the body in reference to the mental strain, unwelcome happenings, or mentally a harmful environment agent that could cause illness. Now, Hans Selye, is spoke about the father of modern stress, said the stress is a non-specific response, basically, of the body to any demand. A stressor is an agent that produces stress at any time. Now, he had a division of stress that called the general adaptation syndrome, where chronological development of the responses to stressors when there is activation and prolonged in three phases he described. One phase was the alarm phase, the state of resistance, and the state of exhaustion. Now, Walter Bradford, was a really part of this whole scenario because he's the guy that identified called the fight or flight syndrome. And I think his work has been popularized in his book called Wisdom of the Body, published in the View of the General Psychology. And he just discovered the fact that there was something to do with the fight or flight, which comes from the catecholamines in the adrenal gland. Now, we're going to talk about the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis today. This is going to be the whole process we're going to be focusing on today. But we are going to also talk about the pineal gland. We're going to also involve the pituitary gland, the thyroid gland, the adrenal gland, the pancreas, the ovary, and even the testicles will be involved in our discussions here this morning and this afternoon. So let's talk about what is cortisol and what does it do? Well, obviously cortisol, the adrenal glands are two little organs on top of each one of the kidneys. Obviously, it contains two different zones, the cortex and the medulla. Now, in the cortex, we see the zone called glomerulosa, which is the outer zone, which produces aldosterone. The zona fasciculata, which produces corticosterone and cortisol. And then the inner zone, the zona reticularis, DHEA, DHEAS, and also aldosterone. Now, the other part is the medulla, which produces the catecholamines, 20% norethindrone, or 80% epinephrine. Now, these catecholamines are derived from amino acid tyrosine, but basically, and these water-soluble hormones are the major hormones underlying the fight-or-flight response. So you see, this all originates there in the adrenal gland. Now, this is an important slide because I want to talk about the nervous system, because we're going to focus on the different parts of it, because we're getting down here to the very bottom of this slide here. Now, we have this called the central nervous system and the peripheral nervous system. Obviously, under the nervous system, we have the brain receives and processes sensory information, initiates responses, stores memories, generates thoughts and emotions, of course. Then we have the spinal cord, conducts what? All signals to and from the brain and controls reflex activities. Then we have the peripheral nerves, the smaller nerves on the outside of the spinal cord. And we have basically the motor neurons, and these are basically the central nervous system to muscles and the glands, and the sensory nerves, sensory organs to the central nervous system. Then under the motor neurons, we have the somatic nerves, controls voluntary emotions, and the autonomic nervous system controls involuntary responses. And this is the area we're going to talk about all day, is the autonomic nervous system, which we have two divisions, the sympathetic, the fight or flight, and the parasympathetic. Now, this gives a good idea of this particular concept of the two different sympathetic and parasympathetic systems. The parasympathetic will basically constrict the pupils, will stimulate the flow of saliva, slows the heart rate, constricts the bronchi, stimulates the peristalsis and secretion in the stomach, stimulates the release of bile and contracts the bladder. This all is mediated through the vagus nerve, the parasympathetic. The sympathetic nerve dilates the pupil, inhibits saliva flow, accelerates the heart rate, dilates the bronchi, inhibits peristalsis and secretion from the stomach, conversion of glycogen to glucose, secretion of adrenaline and norepinephrine, and inhibits bladder function. This is why people that are in sympathetic mode tend to have predisposed to diabetes, put out too much sugar, too much glucose. This is why they have tachycardia and so forth. We'll get back to that in just a few moments. But this is basically the process that goes on between the two different autonomic nervous system processes. Now, this slide here, to me, is one of the most important slides of the day. Because what this tells us is two three things. First of all, everything in our environment that we perceive goes through one of many cranial nerves. So there are five basically sensations we get. One's going to be visual. We see something that's stressful, responds very quickly to a problem. We hear something. We hear bad news. We hear something that's also stressful. We feel something. We have pain in our body. We have pain somewhere in our joints. Otherwise, we have pain when we get burned. I mean, whatever it may be. Then we also have olfactory, basically, and that comes through the first cranial nerve and taste of the ninth. So these cranial nerves are responsible for that transmission of that particular environmental stimulation to the thalamus. But immediately, I mean very quickly, in milliseconds, it goes to we call the fast reaction to the amygdala. And from the amygdala down to the medulla oblongata, sympathetic nerves, adrenal medulla, and epinephrine and norepinephrine. That's called the fight or flight. That happens very quickly, I mean in milliseconds. We do brain scans at our company where we actually measure the speed of the brain. And the normal speed of the brain is about 250 milliseconds. I mean, really fast. So these are quick responses. The other thing is the slower reaction, now when I say slow, not that slow, but that it is a little slower than the one we just talked about. The actual goes down to the cortex and the hippocampus. The hippocampus is a part of our midbrain that stores big memory. And it has a lot to do with stress as well. That immediately then goes to the amygdala after going through there to the hypothalamus, cortical release factor down to the anterior pituitary that releases ACTH, goes to the adrenal gland that releases cortisol. So that's how this whole process starts. So you can see that the cranial nerves, 2, 8, 5 through 7, 8, 9, 10, 1 and 9, are so important to process those environmental stimulations that give us this concept of what we call stress. And people say, well, gee, I don't think I have any stress. What about things in the past that you thought, I sort of forgot about that, I think. Well, guess what? Your hippocampus stores things forever. I mean, we can remember what maybe had happened when you're a baby sometimes, or a kid sometimes. Of course, you get dementia and you forget everything. But as we get older, we tend to forget something, but you can probably remember big events, maybe when you got married or whatever, but we store a lot of memory, but we also can remember a lot of bad things. And I've had patients tell me, I think I got over that marriage. Yeah, but you're still getting, the guy said, you're still paying child support? Yeah. Well, does that bother you? Well, $6,000 a month. I said, well, yeah, I would think that might still a little bit stressful for you. I mean, people don't realize a little thing like that are kept in our hippocampus, where we're trying to suppress it, but it's still there, see? So that's why this becomes an important concept to think about as far as why these different stimuli are important. Now, adrenal glands are important. They function for a lot of good reasons. First of all, and the carbohydrate metabolism, cell energetics, and glucose hemostasis. We have to have it for that purpose. Detoxification capacity, heavy metals, toxins, hormone detox, neural tissue health plays a big role in memory, learning, sleep, and mood. Also, we have it as endocrine function, thyroid, pancreas, insulin, ovarian function, metabolism, weight, fat distribution, body composition, protein turnover. Basically, mucosal integrity is important. Muscle skeletal, bone turnover, muscle integrity, connective tissue, and inflammatory process in modulation, immune regulations, pro-inflammation, and anti-inflammation. So you see that the adrenal gland is important, but it does, in fact, become our enemy if we have to call chronic stress. And we'll go into that here in just a moment. So what happens is, as stress takes part, and all of a sudden we go into a stress mode, we begin to see things happening in our mind. Worrying, muddled thinking, impaired judgment, processing nightmares, decisions, negativity, hasty decisions. Our behavior things, we have accident prone, loss of appetite, loss of sexual desire, drinking more, insomnia, restlessness, smoking more. And then on the emotion side, loss of confidence, more fuzzy, irritability, depression, commonly seen, apathy, alienation and apprehension, and the body headaches, frequent infections, taut muscles, muscle twitching, fatigue, problem involving skin irritations, and breathlessness, just to name a few of the things that can happen with stress. Now, let's talk about how common it is. The World Health Organization said by 2020, which is only a couple of years off, this is really interesting. Mental disease, including stress-related disorders, will be the second leading cause of disability in the world. That's what they prognosticate. This is really incredible. Also, there's much more progress in Western medicine than there is in what we call classic medicine. I mean, I go to four doctors, a cardiologist, endocrinologist, a PCP, ophthalmologist. They don't know anything about this. I mean, all they say, you're doing what? I said, yes. You're taking what? Oh, really? I mean, my supplements, my 32 supplements a day? They have no idea. And so, naturopathy, cardiopractic medicine, acupuncture, Chinese, massage, they know a lot more about this than classic medicine does. So there's a definite disconnect between traditional and integrative medicine and approaches problems involving in stress-induced conditions. There really is a disconnect there. Now, according to the American Institute of Stress, 43% of all adults suffers adverse health events due to stress. But this number is astounding. 75 to 95% of all office visits are stress-related disorders to some degree. I bet I see about 20 patients a day, and I see probably half of them at least or more have a stress factor. Now I'm going to go over all the blood work that I use, the saliva testing and HRV, as I use the diagnostic tools that will tell you ways you can take up stress with many different avenues. So about 1 million workers are absent on an average workday due to stress. That's a lot. And stress is believed to be responsible for more than one half of the 550 million workdays lost annually because of absenteeism. Why would these companies try to improve their loss of days of work and try to help in the stress? We're trying to convince them to work on stress processes and help people to not be stressed out, but I don't know. They do exercise, have exercise programs and so forth. They need to work on the stress part. Stress linked to all leading causes of death, including heart disease, cancer, lung ailments, cirrhosis of liver, and even suicide. Nearly half of all American workers suffer from symptoms of burnout, a disability consequence of stress on the job. And this is really interesting. Workplace violence is rampant. Over 2 million reported instances of homicide, aggravated assault, rape, or sexual assault annually. Homicide is second leading cause of fatal occupational injury and leading cause of death for working women. That really is an astounding statistic. Now, let's talk about short-term stress is okay, but long-term stress has increased risk of several things. Well, what about short-term stress? I tell my patients, sure, I go outside, I witness an accident. What happens? My catecholamines go up, my cortisol goes up, my epinephrine goes up, my heart rate goes up, my blood pressure. I go out there and I can help do things I couldn't begin to do because I have so much more energy. I come back into my office, sit down, cool, calm down, cortisol goes down, heart rate goes down. That's called eustress. That's okay. But if it's prolonged stress, increased risk of diabetes. What does that mean? It causes insulin resistance. Insulin resistance is caused by cortisol, period. And I bet I've seen at least 6 or 7 patients or more a week with insulin resistance and probably 5 or 6 patients a month with diagnosed with new diabetes in the clinic in Lakeway. So you see that insulin resistance is such a common thing today, and it's due to a lot of things. Now, besides low testosterone, which is also another cause of insulin resistance, but stress is another cause as well. So when I look at the lab work, I'm trying to visualize what I think may be the cause. If they have a low testosterone, I'm assuming that could be the cause. If they have a family history of diabetes, I say, well, maybe it's both. So we'll correct the testosterone levels first and see if the hemoglobin A1c goes down, the fasting blood sugar goes down. That means it probably was testosterone deficiency and not due to stress. But if they have other indicators of stress, I'll go over this in a minute, I have to deal with both of them, see. So the main thing is we do know that diabetes certainly is a problem caused by stress. Obesity, of course, again, what happens? Insulin resistance, you gain weight. So that's what happens a lot. We have people that come in and say, I can't lose a pound, I've been on this diet. We had to do a lot of HCG diet. I'm there on a 550 calorie diet. Men should lose a pound a day, women half a pound a day. They do. They're stressed out, they said, I can't do anything, I can't lose weight. And I just had a call from one of the ladies up in Colorado, said, this guy has lost 2 pounds in a week. I said, well, what's going on? He said, well, he's doubled the show, snow, I mean, show the snow, yeah. Well, how often is that? Well, about every day, because there's a lot of snow out there. Well, that's doing exercise. You can't exercise an HCG diet because you don't have the carbohydrates to be able to keep your burning muscle. So you're going to burn muscle, you're not going to lose weight. And that's what happens. He would say, I'm stressed out, I can't sleep at night. So he can't sleep, cortisol goes up at nighttime. He's burning muscle, therefore he can't lose weight. So you see that obesity is affected by that. Increase in lipids. I know that unquestionably that if I have a person who has a cholesterol is elevated, an LDL is elevated, a normal triglycerides, normal HDL, I've got to look as a cause of that of being high cortisol. There are 5 things that cause these lipids to go up, I've discovered as I've gone through the last 4 or 5 years. Family history, can't pick your parents. Diet, cheese, bacon, butter, pork, ham, sausage, all that good stuff, you know, all the good fats. 3, low thyroid. 4, low testosterone. And five, stress. So if you have a person that has lipids that are abnormal, you gotta look at all that stuff. You can rule out very quickly the diet, maybe, if they tell you the truth. Two, you can look at the thyroid, the testosterone, if they're normal. Then we can look at stress or family history. But the point is, clearly, cortisol, without the other factors, can elevate, because I've seen it in men and women on statin drugs. You expect statin drugs to bring them all down. Now, if I find someone on statin drugs, cholesterol is elevated, LDL, unquestionably is cortisol, irregardless of the statin drug. Hypertension, insomnia, again, why? Because in insomnia, what happens? The pineal gland produces melatonin. Cortisol destroys the production of melatonin in the pineal gland. That's why you take melatonin. That's a good way to sleep after, if someone's stressed out. It helps a lot. Metabolic syndrome, which is elevation of cholesterol, LDL, triglycerides, and so forth. Inflammation. I'm going to show you some really important slides on inflammation in a few moments, but cortisol is so inflammatory, causes mood disorders, osteoporosis, actually can cause bone loss, and I'll show you some studies of that in just a few moments. Irritable bowel syndrome and cancers. Now, I think that, and this is really important, I think that one of the more common causes of cancer is stress. And I'll tell you why. I had five patients now in the last, well, I've been there at about almost 10 years or 9 years now at Natural BioHealth. We've had four patients who have cancer in the breast and on hormones that have come in. Most of them were already on hormones before they came in because we use bioidentical hormones. There have been no studies that show that estrogen, bioidentical estrogen, causes cancer of the breast. I have proof of that in four or five studies. There's no question that progesterone causes apoptosis of cancer, and so does testosterone, called apoptosis of cells, proven studies. So what in the world did these women have in common? Not all of them had stress. Every one of them, when we talked to them, they told me out their full story, they all had stress. What does stress do? Compromise the immune system. The gut is the 80% of our immune system in our gut. Their gut was compromised. Their immune system was compromised. They got cancer. One of them had shingles. Why? Because they had no, their immune system was compromised. So I do think that, to me, the cancer of the breast, and I have about 8 risk factors I talk to patients about, but the most common one shows up all the time is compromised because of stress in the immune system. So that's why when I deal with patients in my office, and that's why we really encourage everybody to try to really make a point to treat people that are stressed out with our protocol we have for stress, which I'll go over later sometime this afternoon. Now, it's not easy, because you gotta get rid of the stressors. And that's, I say, you gotta divorce your husband. And that doesn't go over too well sometimes. I know. Now, and they blame me, of course. Nearly half of all Americans take at least one prescription drug. Can you imagine that? And about one third take two or more that cause adverse side effects, inadequate treatment, and lead to over 105,000 deaths annually. But look at this number. Over one half of Americans have stress disrupted sleep or with concerns of money and unemployment. But guess what? Over $300 billion in sales of Xanax, Zoloft, Ambien, the top 20. I mean, that's all they do. All these doctors do in practice is just throw at them some drugs. I mean, it's just so common. Here, Zoloft, Xanax are things that just give like water. And then their kids get the Xanax and sell it on the street for $15. And they wonder why they're hooked on drugs. I mean, that's what happens all the time. Now, so why am I interested in stress? Well, this is a couple reasons why I got interested in it years ago. I had patients on hormone replacement therapy who were just not doing well. They're on testosterone, they're on their thyroid, they're on estradiol, progesterone, but whatever reason, they weren't having relief of their symptoms. They still had their thyroid, they still had their hair falling out, their dry skin, their constipation, their middle nails. Testosterone, they still had a libido problem, their fatigue was still there, they weren't having good, stamina wasn't improved at all. Estradiol, they just were a little mild hot flashes still. Yeah, their blood levels were perfect. Just perfect. Progesterone, basically, we noticed that women who were postmenopausal on adequate doses of estrogen were having some breakthrough bleeding. Yet their progesterone levels were high. I said, well, there's got to be something going on here because, you know, that doesn't make sense. And I know that there's a compromised immune system that causes increased risk of cancer and as well as viruses. I think I decided at that point, way back then, about several years ago, it had to be cortisol. So we did all our testing. We did a saliva testing, blood work, and we did, of course, started doing HRV about a year and a half or 2 years ago. So what does cortisol do? These are the bad things about cortisol. And I want to emphasize a lot of more, really more than some, because diverse body essential resources are promoting survival. That's what it's trying to do. But it causes blood sugar, pulse, and blood pressure to rise and increase the risk of diabetes. This is a very common cause of pre-diabetes or diabetes. Increase the risk of weight gain or lack of weight loss. We discussed that a few moments ago. Damps our immune system. We talked about that. Responsible for autoimmune diseases. I'll show you a slide on that here in a few more minutes. Shuts down reproductive functions. We talked about that at our table a while ago. I had a practice of infertility for 35 years. I did mostly gynecology and fertility. And I had pretty good luck. About 85% of my patients got pregnant. Those who didn't, we did IVF. And maybe another 5% got pregnant. But the other 10%, they didn't get pregnant. They adopted a baby and got pregnant probably 90% of the time because of stress. So I have patients coming to my office now, although I don't practice infertility, and I see them, they say, I can't get pregnant, Dr. Vesti. I look at their blood test that says, well, you're under stress. How do you know? Okay, blood test, tell me you're under stress. Well, how'd you know that? Well, aren't you under stress? Yes. Can't get pregnant? Well, that's stress. One thing. And list all the other stressors they have in their life. I said, we're going to have to deal with your stress so you can get pregnant. And so that's why it's important, because it affects reproduction. Causes loss of hair. Now, I had a patient in Round Rock, a 72 years old, a realtor. She said she's not under stress, but she told me the month before, she says, I'm just stressed all the time. They're killing me. There's some people that come into Round Rock and Austin, 155, 60 new couples a day, and there's no inventory. I mean, she was stressed out, but she says, my hair's coming out, and I'm blaming on my testosterone. You gave me too much testosterone, and it's caused my hair to go out. And I want you to pay for a transplant for my hair. I said, wait a minute. I'm not going to pay for your transplant of your hair. So I said, I'm going to get a DHT, dihydro testosterone, to see if a conversion, converting testosterone to DHT, which is a factor for hair loss. I'm going to test your thyroid and see if your thyroid is not functioning. And I'm going to do a test for stress. I'm not under stress. I said, okay, we'll see. Well, sure enough, normal DHT, normal thyroid function, and her sex hormone binding globulin, which I'll talk about in a few months later on, was sky high. I said, you're under stress. So we're going to have to basically do something about your stress. I'm not going to buy or pay for your $5,000 transplant. Well, finally convinced her that she was stressed out until she calmed down. But she was really irate. Causes erectile dysfunction. All the guys came in and said, I can't get it up. Oh, Lord, have mercy. What am I going to do? I said, well, you're under stress. No, I'm not. Guys do not admit the stress. It's the most difficult thing in the world to pull it out of them. So I sit there for 10 minutes talking about what's going on in their life. And first thing you know, I write in a column all the things that they talk about that cause stress. And before you know it, we have a whole column of things. And it's really important because, and I know, and I'm the guy, I don't want to admit my defaults, but that's the problem with all of us guys. We just think we're Superman, you know? And I should pass out a shirt that says a big S on it. You know, you guys are Superman. But no, they don't. Women love to talk about things like that. So we have to realize that just by itself, without any testosterone issues, just by itself, cortisol will interrupt that libido issue. And I have guys with high testosterone, perfect normal, and they said, I just have a problem. So we have to deal with that too. Reduction in stomach acid, increased elimination of food. This is where the enzymes play a huge role. I mean, I have people on the protease, the digestive enzymes. In fact, I'm taking them both myself. And this is really important because that gut plays a huge role in all this. That's why it's so important. Now, it also increases the heart rate and blood pressure. This is where people end up having hypertension secondary to too much cortisol over a long period of time. Hides your brain awareness. No sleep. It's the cortisol destroys the melatonin from the pineal gland. Causes memory loss with decrease in blood supply to the amygdala as well as the hippocampus. Suppresses the growth hormone production. Interferes with insulin reaction, causes weight gain, diabetes, and also metabolic syndrome. Reduces the thyroid hormone activity by decreasing production and inactivation of circulating thyroid hormone. Otherwise, it prevents the conversion of T4 to the active hormone T3. And therefore, they have thyroid symptoms in spite of the fact they have normal blood tests because of cortisol. And causes oxidative stress. Well, what is oxidative stress? Well, see, the free radicals are an oxygen molecule that has basically a two or three parts of the electrons that are unpaired. And what it does, it goes into the cells, the normal cells, and grabs molecules from that cell to make it where it's stable, and those other cells die. So antioxidants go in there and take the place of those goods of the normal cells and try to clean out the toxins. That's what they're for. But stress, cortisol, causes oxidative stress, and that's what we want to help prevent. Now this is an interesting article because this tells us about perception of stress by Dr. Keller et al., where the study sought to examine the relationship among basically the amount of stress and perception of stress affects health and health and mortality outcomes in a nationally representative sample of adults. But they found that the amount of stress and the perception that stress impacts are associated with poor health, mental health. Individuals perceive that stress affects their health. They reported a large amount of stress had an increased risk of what? Premature death. So you see that even the perception of it is bad. Now, here's just we're going to give you a little better view of how it affects basically stress on the body. And we talked about that in a slide earlier, but you show that where you're going down to the amygdala, down to the medulla, that where you stimulate the epinephrine, which causes glucose to be broken down, increases blood sugar, blood pressure, breathing rate, metabolic rate, and changes blood flow pattern, including increase in alertness and decrease basically in wellness. And then we have the opposite goes down through the pituitary, through the hypothalamus, all the way down the adrenal gland, causing the cortex to increase the production of mineral corticoids and cortisol, retention of fluid, a lot of edema, increase in blood flow and as well as blood pressure, protein and fats are broken down to convert to glucose, leading to increase in blood sugar, and also affects the immune system. So that's the cascade of events that takes place in the adrenal gland for that. Now for the immune system, it's interesting because you have the minutes to hours, which is good, active, proactive, where the immune system enhancement is there, but increase in leukocytes, innate response is increased and adaptive response. But then as you go toward the chronic stress, the opposite occurs. You have decreased in leukocytes, decreased innate response, and a decrease in the adaptive response. So you see that's how it affects the immune system, which is not good, of course. And the article by Sergestrom and all would show that actually acute stress, very short period, is okay, but long-term stress, of course, is not good. And now, how does it affect the autoimmune disease? This is interesting because it's one of the five reasons why we have autoimmune disease. Basically, the triggers are basically stress, hormones, metals, food, allergens, as well as pesticides and poisons. That encompasses almost everything in our society. But look what it creates, probably involving the brain, multiple sclerosis, autism, Guillain-Barré syndrome, psychological problems, the bones, rheumatoid arthritis, ankylosing spondylolisthesis, polybiology, rheumatoid arthritis, fibromyalgia, the muscular dystrophy, skin disease, lungs, nerves. I mean, all autoimmune diseases are affected by a combination of many things, including stress. But hormones play a role as well. Now, inflammation has its impact on what? Increased risk of cancer and arthritis, cardiovascular, pulmonary disease, neurological disease, immune disease, Alzheimer's, and diabetes. Alzheimer's is thought to be type 3 diabetes, by the way. Why? Because glucose plays a huge role, I'm sure. Now, we talked about oxidative stress a few moments ago, where you have this radical, this free radical that is an oxygen carrying, has a, that basically about two or three missing parts to it that have to go in and attach to our normal cells and extract their electrons from that, from their cells. And you see there's a multitude of things that can happen with free oxidative stress on our heart, our skin, our kidneys, our joints, our lungs, our brain, our immune system, blood vessels. I mean, everything imaginable can be associated, not necessarily all the only cause, due to free radical oxidative stress. That's why it's so important. And I wish we could have ways of eliminating all the toxins in our environment, because it seems like it's getting worse rather than better. I mean, just like we were just talking earlier about, now they have ways of putting Roundup in all the, now in the, actually it's in the plants. They're now they're actually in the plant itself, so that, therefore, the good news is it kills the bugs, so they go into, they don't kill the plant, but they'll kill us. I mean, it doesn't make sense. And they're also going to do even more things that try to make things better for the farmers, and so the crops will be saved, but they don't care about what that does to us, I'm afraid. So see, that's why I say there's so many conditions that we see that are related to oxidative stress, diabetes, aging, chronic fatigue, I mean, just macular degeneration, just all sorts of conditions that are associated with oxidative stress. And then, of course, too much cortisol causes what? Hypertension, vascular damage, left ventricular remodeling dysfunction, central obesity, thrombotic state, increased risk of cardiovascular risk. That's really common now to see. And I'll talk about that as we go into the treatment here a little bit later on. And then this just shows you about the thyroid. We talked about the thyroid. Two things happen. Thyroid symptoms occur. Excessive cortisol decreases TSH, lowering thyroid production, inhibits conversion of T4 to T3. The T3 is the active hormone, not T4. So when you block the conversion of T4 to T3, you may have in your blood work normal thyroid function, but the T3-T4 ratio will be low. Now, why I say that, my company we use in Austin, but they're also in Houston, they're everywhere else in Texas, called CPL, you'll see very commonly all normal blood tests for thyroid. But the TSH should be reported maybe greater than 2. Well, according to Mayo Clinic, the TSH should be less than 2. That's how we use our criteria. So if I had a TSH going to be more than 2, if the T3-4 ratio is greater than 3 to 4 to 1, it's normal. But if they're less than 3 to 4 to 1, otherwise your T3 should be at least 3 to 4 times more than the T4. And if you divide the T3 at 1.3 to 2 and divide it by to the T3 of 2, it's way below 2. And they have thyroid symptoms. To me, it's called thyroid resistance or subclinical thyroid deficiency. So you got to be careful about interpreting blood tests when the patient has all the freaking symptoms and they have the T3, T4 reverse. They have cortisol involving their T3 as far as making sure that this is, in fact, a thyroid problem. Now, this is important on the gut. Obviously, this slide tells us there are things that actually increase in the green and decrease in the red. So obviously we see that when you start with stress, basically the green increases the fight or flight syndrome, increases the flowing of the intestine, increases the intestinal transit time, increases the putrefactive harmful bacteria, increases inflammation. The curcumin, omega-3, vegetables, fruit, pre and post-probiotics help to improve things, help to make intestinal time better. So this is all based on leaky gut, by the way, is also important how it basically it increases with stress. And that's why Vicki, her lecture was so important on leaky gut. God knows how often we see leaky gut. And that's why enzymes play such a huge role in leaky gut. And this is a slide just showing under basically inflammatory disorders and subtle hypertension, causing a problem with what they call a pot belly. Under certain conditions, basically cortisol will cause an attack by the middle fatty called, which causes the immune system to produce inflammatory cytokines. And some of the inflammatory cytokines are in our fat, by the way. And immune cells that kill the germs cause arthritis, fatigue, asthma, COPD, heart disease, all inflammatory disorders. And again, stress will and inflammation telling the endocrine system to produce an extra cortisol. Insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome, type 2 diabetes, dysphoria, obesity, and high blood pressure. And this is, of course, an example of what we call the pot belly, called the Dunlop disease. Belly's unlocked over the belt. And when I see someone like this, or this big pear shape like this, that's a sign we have some problems. Okay, and another slide is showing the effects on the bone. We have the three cells, the osteocytes, the osteoblasts, and the osteoclasts. Muscle mass is decreased, the actual osteoclasts are decreased, house of bone, decreasing bone formation. The osteoblasts are decreasing proliferation, apoptosis, decreasing bone formation, and cortisol then will cause increased absorption of osteoclasts, apoptosis, and therefore bone resorption as well. So long-term cortisol will cause osteoporosis. Matter of fact, long-term, the runners that do these 26-mile marathon plus over a long period of time can develop osteopenia and stress fractures because of cortisol. Cortisol will go up. The first 2 hours of exercise will go down, but the last 2 hours and more, cortisol goes up, and they end up with likelihood of osteopenia and maybe even osteoporosis. So that's why it's important. I tell people, don't do marathons, just do half marathons, because they don't listen to me. And then, of course, effects of libido. Obviously, cortisol has a big effect on libido. As the cortisol goes, even as down, there's some problem with libido. It makes maximum level, then it goes down as the cortisol goes up. And then, of course, the pregnenolone steal is an important phenomenon. This is really important. Why? Because it's where the superhormone pregnenolone is used as a raw material to make what? Cortisol, instead of your sex hormones. And so you see here, you have cortisol producing pregnenolone, and rather than going toward the DHEA, androgestrel, estrone, and testosterone, estradiol, it goes toward progesterone and cortisol. This is called a pregnenolone steal. So people that have stress without even taking hormones will notice a decrease in testosterone sometimes, estrogen, will notice a decrease in progesterone, and have symptoms thereof. So that steal is common. And when I do a blood test, you'll see it in low DHEA, which I'll show you in the next lecture. And you'll see signs of this in their blood work. So this is a pretty important thing to look at. And this slide here shows you the fact that, and this is important, you can inhibit not only the gonadotropins, the anti-pituitary, LHFSH, and the ovaries, because I found back in 1970, when I was first practicing, women who I was taking care of, husbands went to Vietnam, and they stopped menstruating. All the time they were gone. They came back, they got menstruated again, they got pregnant. Why? Because cortisol inhibited gonadotropins, the FSH, LH, even in the hypothalamus and the ovaries. Progesterone is used as a substrate, basically called pregnenolone steal, for cortisol. So this enhanced the cortisol production and things got worse. So you see, just the fact that cortisol, when interrupting the gonadotropins, makes a big difference as well. And also levels of sleep, we'll see that the levels of sleep will go, basically will be compromised by cortisol as well. And 1 minute of anger weakens the immune system for 4 to 5 hours, while 1 minute of laughter boosts the immune system for 24 hours. Study that something? Just laugh a little bit. It would help a lot. Now, the last few slides are the causes of stress, and then I'll be finished for this lecture. Now, obviously, social stress is the most, as we see at home, relationships at home, common divorce, especially politicians, taxi drivers, policemen, firefighters, and doctors. Working mother and fathers have little time with the children, let alone for themselves, domestic violence, financial strain, birth of a child, death, illness, fear, worry, and anger. This is what most people think about when they talk about stress, these factors. But sleep also makes a big difference. If you don't get 8 hours of sleep or 7 hours are undisturbed, you'll have cortisol goes up at nighttime. Lack of sleep, racing thoughts, nightmare, low bedtime melatonin, low progesterone at bedtime, inconsistent sleep schedule, irregular working hours. These also will cause high levels of cortisol. Then we have workplace stress, increasing unemployment, competition for jobs, increased job description due to less employment, increased health insurance, increased taxes, decrease in salaries. Again, things that can affect some problems with stress. Blood sugar issues, skipping meals. Now, I don't know how often this may affect, but it may be a factor. Too much glycemic food in the diet, junk food diet, alcohol consumption, fast food for long periods of time, high intake of simple carb versus protein may be a factor in some people as far as increasing cortisol. Now, this is the one that no one ever thinks about. They say, well, yeah, you say, no, I don't need stress at all. Everything's good at home, blah, blah, blah. But I haven't had back pain for 6 months. I said, how bad is it? Oh, 1 out of 10 is a 9. Well, guess what? Your adrenal gland pumps out cortisol to cut down inflammation. So pain, after surgery, after delivery, you lose hair after delivery. Why? Because your cortisol goes up and your thyroid goes down and you have a little bit of low thyroid sometimes. So pain of any sort, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, is an inflammatory process, see? They have what? Inflammation can cause what? High cortisol. Allergies, arthritis, overweight, bowel issues, celiac disease, environmental issues can also be a factor. So you see, but this one here is the one I see so often neglected because they don't think about pain. And they say, oh, by the way, yeah, I had pain a lot. And then, of course, environmental factors, really, air pollution, water, okay, this ain't Flint, Michigan. I mean, all that lead in pipes. Oh my gosh, you're talking about stress. Mercury in our teeth, old fillings, mercury in fish, mercury in food, aluminum in underarm deodorant, arsenic in rice. In the rice fields of Beaumont now and Victoria, they use arsenic to kill the bugs. Now they found it, a little bit of quantity in the rice, unless you eat a lot of rice, I guess. But the point is, there's so many things, medications that are put in the water now. You know, they said about you shouldn't be drinking tap water anymore because you may know, you know what's in it. And filtered water, you've got to be careful about that too, because you use tap water that's filtered with something that doesn't take out the birth control pills or whatever else is in it. So the best way is rainwater. But if you live in California, look at it, you can't drink anything. There's no rain in California. So you see that these are some things in our environment that also can be a cause. And that's why I do a lot of testing for heavy metals. When I find someone, I can't find nothing else wrong, no pain, no other causes at all. And I say, well, I'm going to test you for mercury, possible basic lead poisoning. I have a lady who lives in San Antonio on a ranch, and they use a lot of tin, drill holes, you know, to put tin buildings up and pin tin this and that. And garden ore, she had a high level of tin toxicity. So I had to chelate her out the tin. I used common glutathione and DMSO to bring down her tin toxicity. We had some that had teeth, had mercury toxicity because they were actually deteriorating the mercury fillings. So we pick up with lead, basically these heavy metal testing, we can pick up sometimes lead poisoning, or we can pick up a problem with mercury or whatever, tin. Gives you about, I think, Genova has a testing kit, about 12 or 14 different testing that does for heavy metals. But the point is that these are things you have to look for as well. Okay, now that should be about it. I think we've covered most everything for this part about the causes. Anybody have any questions at all? Yes, sir.
Could you just go over the ratios you were talking about with the T3?
Yeah, the T3 should be 3 to 4 times more than the T4. So if I divide this, let's say T3 is 2, the T4 is 1.4. Divide 1.4 into 2, it's way below 2. Should be 3 to 4 to 1. 3 times to 4 times more T3 than T4. That's just a ratio we're looking for that defines the presence of what I would call hypothyroidism with symptoms. And this is something the endocrinologists don't even think about. By my endocrinologist in Austin, I see him every 3 months. He was my medical student at Baylor. And I go in there and I'm on 2.5 grains of compounded thyroid. He wants to give me levothyroxine, which I would never take. And he said, I get a TSH, it's 0.01, my T3 is 5. He said, Joe, you're toxic, you're gonna have a heart attack. I said, no, I don't feel toxic. He says, well, you are. I said, no, I'm not. He says, yes, you are. No, I'm not. Do I have diarrhea? No. Do I have palpitations? No. Do I look like I'm have eyes bugging out because I found this? No. Am I nervous? A cat in a hot tin roof? No. I'm not toxic, Tom. I said, yes, you are. I said, I'll see you next month. I mean, I guess these people don't understand. There is no such thing of having too much T3 unless you have symptoms. Dr. Neil Rosier really is a great guy that has talked about how you can use thyroid. Even psychiatrists will use up to 8 times some of the levels for treating psychiatric disorders and have no problem with it. You look for toxicity levels, not because it's a blood, the blood test is 5 or T3 or 6 or 7 or 8. You look for symptoms, check their pulses, ask how they feel. I mean, so important. Okay, yes?
Who's that doctor?
Dr. Neil Rozier, R-O-U-Z-I-E-R. He gives a lot of courses in hormone therapy for bioidentical hormones. And he gives some webinars on different things, and he does a great job on talking about thyroid. Really is incredible difference.
What heavy metal testing lab do you use?
It's Genova.
Genova, okay. Mm-hmm. Is it hair?
No, it's urine.
Okay.
Yeah, hair's not too good, especially if you dye your hair.
Yes.
And many women dye their hair. So, and the urine's better. They collect the allergen portion in 6 hours. They get a tub, they collect it for 6 hours. They take one DMSA for 6 hours of collection, and then they measure. DMSA is a provocative. It brings out of the cells. You can't just measure it in the urine or blood because you have to have a provocative agent to bring it out of the cells. Okay.
I have one more question with regards to hormone profiles. When you're testing the labs, do you use any urinary conjugated metabolite testing as well with that?
No, just blood. Yeah, we do all of our blood testing because we found that, and I'll show you the next lecture about saliva. Saliva is just not very apt when it comes to how we test for blood for hormone evaluation. Neither is it a good way for testing for cortisol. And I'll show you why in the next lecture.